Tonight's reading is from James chapter 3, verses 1 to 11. That's James chapter 3, verse 1 to 11. Now, not many of you should become teachers, my fellow believers, because you know that who teach will be judged more strictly. We all stumble in many ways. Anyone who is never at fault in what they say is perfect, able to keep their whole body in check. When we put bits into the mouths of horses to make them obey us, we can turn the whole animal. Or take ships as an example. Although they are so large and driven by strong winds, they are steered by a very small rudder, wherever the pilot wants to go. Likewise, the tongue is a small part of the body, but it makes great boasts. Consider what a great forest is set on fire by a small spark. The tongue also is a fire, a world of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole body. It sets the whole course of one's life on fire, and itself set on fire by hell. All kinds of animals, birds, reptiles, and sea creatures are being tamed and have been tamed by mankind. But no human being can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil full of deadly poison. With the tongue we praise our Lord and Father, and with it we curse human beings who have been made in God's likeness. Out of the same mouth come praise and cursing. My brothers and sisters, this should not be. Can both fresh water and salt water flow from the same spring?
Thanks, Hayley. It's great. Good evening, everybody. Good to see you. Can I just echo Diana's welcome to the annual meeting on Wednesday? Really got some important things to share, and whether you're a partner, official partner, or you're a part of the church here, I encourage you to be here. We're looking and thinking about the future of the church, what our next steps might be, so I'd love you to be there. Great. So we're looking at this series of things Jesus never said. Some of them have been surprising, some of them have been fairly obvious, but nonetheless, somehow, there are things that we say or do that kind of get themselves into the history of who we are and how we are. And one of the things Jesus never said is what we're looking at tonight, just between us. Anybody ever done that to you? Just usually in a whisper or just get a little bit closer to you and just between us, have you heard about him? Just between us. Have you heard what they've been up to? And did you know? And usually, when we're using that kind of thing, what's happening is there's something going on called gossip. Gossip. If we look at this passage tonight, I want to tell you that this is one of the most important things that if as Christians we get a hold of in the way we conduct ourselves, God will make such an amazing difference to how we are because of who we are. And how we are is absolutely vital because God has made us Christians. He's put Christ's presence through his Spirit in our lives, and that's meant to live out through us. And yet the passage that Hayley just read kind of indicates that, great ideal, but it's not always that easy. So I just want to look at some things that help us pick up on this tonight and see how some of the powerful challenges of how we are, or maybe just simply say how we speak. How we speak. Because how we speak and what we say makes an amazing difference to the relationships we're in. I get the privilege of doing a lot of marriage prep when some of our folk, and especially our younger couples, are getting married. And I send them away with homework, and it's called a conflict resolution homework. So I actually want them to go away and fight or decide what they're going to fight about. And not just that, not what you're going to fight about, but how are you going to fight? Why? Because actually, fighting about socks on the bedroom floor and who left them there last is not a big deal. How you fight is. The words you say in an argument are usually more damaging and more hurtful than what the argument is actually all about. And I'm not bothered whether young couples fight or not. In fact, I expect them to. Half hope they will, because they're there to knock the spots off each other. Not physically, might I add, but they're there to change and shape and challenge each other. And I have to say that after nearly 38 years of marriage, I've got this still a lot of work to do. Okay? The easiest thing in the world with a mouth as big as mine is to say the wrong thing so quickly that I find the next 5 minutes I'm simply saying, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. I don't know whether you like that, but just between the two of us, I am. Okay? The Proverbs is a great book in the Bible. It's part of what we call wisdom literature in the Bible. And there are some of the Psalms are wisdom literature. The book of Ecclesiastes is wisdom literature. Some would say that Matthew 5, 6, and 7, the Sermon on the Mount, is wisdom literature. The passage that Haley read, the letter of James, would be classed as wisdom literature. Some Bible teachers would say that James actually is kind of re-preaching or actually expanding on the Sermon on the Mount. So we're going to dip into some of the wisdom literature of the Bible tonight and see if it can get a handle on us as we try and get a handle on it. Proverbs 16:28, a perverse person stirs up conflict and a gossip separates close friends. But it's not gossip, you know, if you're simply sharing it for prayer. I'm telling you this just so you can pray about it, just between the two of us. It's not gossip, really, because you care. No, it is gossip, and you're using prayer as a means of gossiping. Never mind. A perverse person stirs up conflict. A gossip separates close friends. 18:21, the tongue has the power of life and death, and those who love it will eat its fruit. I had a mushy apple this afternoon. Don't you just hate mushy apples? I mean, I eat an apple a day, and just occasionally you put your teeth through a mushy apple, and you're like, oh, the texture. And occasionally you get a bad one, the taste of a bad apple in your mouth. And the writer of the Proverbs says, the tongue's got the power of life and death. You share the wrong thing in the wrong way, and actually, it's you who's eating the bad apple. 20 verse 19, a gossip betrays a confidence, so avoid anyone who talks too much. The writer of the Proverbs, or the gatherer of Proverbs, if you will, time and time again picks up on what we say, who we say it to, and how we say it. And God calls us to guard ourselves. Jesus speaks in the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew chapter 7 and verse 12. So in everything, do to others what you would have them do to you. So you know that time when you've got a nice juicy bit of gossip to tell somebody at work? Jesus says, have a minute and just think, would you like them to be saying this kind of thing about you? Because if you do, then go ahead, gossip away. But if you know jolly well, the last thing in the world you want is somebody to be gossiping about you. Jesus is saying, so don't do it. Don't do it. Because actually, if you get this one right, you're actually living out the summary of the law and the prophets. Matthew 18, he says, if your brother or sister sins, go and point out their fault just between the two of you. Ah, hang on a minute. Just between the two of who? Not just between the two of us, but the person with whom you might have a difficulty or an issue, instead of talking about them to somebody else, you'd never believe what he did. You never believe what she said. No, you go and talk to he, and you go and talk to she, and you say, can we just have a coffee and a chat? Because something you said yesterday or something you did, I'm really struggling with that. Can we? I just need to know where you're coming from on that. Can we have relationship? Because too often what we do is when somebody has said something that we don't like or we've heard something, then we'll talk about it to somebody else. When Jesus says, no, actually, the first person to talk about it is the person that you've got the issue with. Now that is scary, isn't it? That is frightening, isn't it? And that's why we don't do it. But Jesus said, you better. If you want to live great relationships, if you want to live great lives, if you want to live godly lives, then moving away from a gossip-based lifestyle to a generous and an open and an honest and a real lifestyle is absolutely vital. We move on, some of the scriptures that we look at. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 15. Instead, speaking the truth in love, we will grow to become in every respect the mature body of him who is the head, that is Christ. Wow. So Paul writes, and says, if you want to grow up as a Christian, then you discover how to speak the truth in love. There were two lads who they were brought up out in the sticks, and they decided they would they'd have a holiday in the big city. So they went to Manchester. And they went to one of these discotheques that night. You know what happens in a discotheque, you end up dancing with a couple of girls, and they took them back and sat at the table and started to chat. One of them, well, he kind of thought he was a bit of a ladies' man, so he thought, I can talk to them. But his mate there, he was like, didn't know what to do, you know, just kind of arms folded or thumbs, he's nervous and he's all fingers and thumbs and he doesn't know what to say, and he whispers to his mates, what do I do? He says, well, talk to her. 5 minutes passes. What do I say? His mate goes, look at her. He says, think of something nice and say it to her. 5 minutes passes. You don't sweat a right lot, do you? Speaking the truth in love. Speaking the truth in love means that we're quiet first before we speak. There's a brilliant Psalm 4, verse 4, and it says this, in your anger, don't sin. Lie on your bed and be silent. In your anger, don't sin. He doesn't say don't be angry. Psalmist recognizes there are going to be times when you're angry, but he also recognizes that that's the time when your tongue is liable to do the most damage. So basically he says, in your anger, don't sin. Lie on your bed and be silent. In other words, zip it. Just put a zip right across it. Go away. Lie on your bed. Be quiet. In other words, take time out. Take time out to think through what's gone on. Lie on your bed and be silent. And then you're going to come back with some good responses. Well, actually, it was my fault after all. Actually, I'm the one who needs to apologize. Actually, I've got all hot under the collar about something that's nothing. And I'm just glad that I took time out not to say anything, but now I can go back and I can have a generous or a gracious and a loving response. Speak the truth in love. And when we come to this passage in James is such a strong passage. He begins the passage by saying, we all stumble in many ways. Anyone who is never at fault in what they say is perfect, able to keep their whole body in check. Wow. Here's James kind of bringing wisdom into what he's writing. And he's saying, if you manage to marshal your tongue, if you manage to get to a place in your Christian growth and your Christian lifestyle that you are never at fault in what you say, then you are perfect. You can keep your whole body in check. What's he saying is? He's saying kind of almost the last thing in the world you're going to get right is your tongue. The last thing you in the world as a Christian you're going to put straight is your mouth. And yet James isn't saying because of that, don't do it. He's actually saying we need to work on it. And he moves on in that passage to use four or five really powerful, short, sharp illustrations that kind of help us pick up on what he means. And the first thing he says is, you know, you can tame a horse. Horses are much bigger than you. Kind of they're huge and they've got these huge big necks and they stand over you by so many hands high. And how on earth are you going to tame that? Well, it's quite simple. What you do is you put a bit in its mouth with leather reins on it. And you can pull on those reins, and it's left for left and right for right, and it's backwards for stop. Something like that, anyway. That's the level of my horsemanship, okay? And he says, with a bit, you can tame a horse, even though it's a powerful beast. And then he goes on and uses another illustration. He says, see a big ship. And look at the size of the ship. How do you steer a ship? You steer a ship with a small rudder. Just a small rudder. That rudder can take the ship left, and it can take it right. This time it's right for left and left for right. But never mind, we won't go there tonight. That's the length of my salesmanship. But that's what you can do. You can steer a big ship with a small rudder. And then he uses another illustration. He talks about a spark. And he says, you only need a spark to set a forest on fire. We know that. Last year, we know that people just used a spark or a little fire and set the whole of Saddleworth Moor ablaze. Or if you're from the other side of the country, Saddleworth Moor. Okay, that's what my little grandsons call it, Saddleworth Moor. It's great, I love it. I will forgive my daughter one day for bringing them up in Yorkshire. Just kidding, I'm a quarter Yorkshire, I've told you some of that. I confess that one day. Right, but a small spark can set a whole forest ablaze. Power of the tongue, James says. And then he goes on and uses another illustration where he said, and your tongue is set ablaze by the fire of hell. Now, Haley read hell because that's how it's translated, but the word there is a very specific word, Gehenna. Jesus uses it, and James uses it, and time again in the Bible, it just translates Gehenna as hell, which is okay in one sense, but actually they're specifically picking up on a horrible location just outside Jerusalem. And just outside Jerusalem is a valley. It's called the Valley of Gethinnom or Gehenna. And it was a place where you read about in the Old Testament where tragically some kings actually set their children on fire as sacrifices to false gods. Horrific, tragic, evil. And that place had become known as an evil place, and it became the burning rubbish tip of Jerusalem. So if you went over to Gethinnom, you'd always see smoke rising up. You'd always smell the stench of the rubbish tip as the rubbish was burning. And James says, you want to know what your tongue's like? It's like it's been set on fire by that filthy, stinking, smelly, burning rubbish tip just outside Jerusalem. That's really powerful because we get an idea of the damage we are doing and we're creating when sadly we let our tongues run riot with us. And then James throws down a powerful, powerful challenge because he says, guess what we do with our tongues? We've been doing half of it tonight. He says, with our tongues, we praise our God. It's what they're made for. They're made for worship. They're made for singing. They're made for speaking out thanksgiving and expressions of gratitude and love and grace to our wonderful God and to our Lord and Savior who's poured his love on our lives. And our tongues are meant to be a praise-filled response to him. But then he says this, out of the same mouth comes praise and cursing. Can fresh water and salt water come from the same spring? He's really saying no. But in our mouths, tragically, it does. Can that happen? James saying, no, it can't. No, it shouldn't, but it does. And so he calls us to tame our tongues. There's a guy called Edward Bulwer Lyttelton, and I only know that because I've known the quote for many, many years, but I didn't know who said it, so I looked it up on Google, just so you know. I'm not that clever. But Edward Bulmer Littleton, Bulwer Littleton said this, "The pen is mightier than the sword." But some wag put, "But I prefer my laptop." And I just cross laptop out and put phone. Because the problem with our tongues is that when we get it wrong, it's usually that we've got it wrong in an instant. You know, I didn't get up in the morning deciding that at some point Catherine would do something in the day, and when she did that thing, I would immediately get cross with her for no reason at all. You don't think I would do that, do you? I do, just so you know, I do. I don't get up planning to let my tongue say something to somebody that I think, oh, I just wish I'd never said that. I'm not that kind of careful to plan my tongue life out. The problem with our tongues is that time and time again, we're speaking them into the instant of the now. What we're saying is right here, right now. One of the worst things about the era we live in is that everything is instant. Everything we're doing is like we're responding to what we're seeing, responding to what we're reading, responding to what we're hearing. And we can make that response right here, right now. But James is saying, hang on a minute. If you've really got a control of your tongue, if God's grace is at work in your life, then the right here, right now will actually come from a right relationship with Jesus, a right walking in his grace and in his love and his holiness and his purity, that those things will be what come out of you in the right here and the right now. And yet time and time again, we find that it doesn't work like that. So we live in this instant age. And I don't know about you, but so much of what we're doing, it may not be the tongue. It might be. It might be our iPad or our notebook. It might be our PC, and then we're typing away and responding to Facebook or Instagram or whatever we've just seen. And we think, oh, I don't like that. Bang, 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 bang. And we're just throwing out a few more words just to pile on the pressure. We do it all the time. But maybe what we've got to do is even start further back and say, God, am I going to live with Instagram? So I'm speaking in the right here and the right now. Or am I going to live with Insta grace that comes from my relationship with you? So the last time you just banged something out on Instagram, was it good or bad? Was it a quick response that you just flew off on your smartphone? Or was it full of grace? When you're on Facebook, there's so much that you can gang up on. We hear about Facebook bullying, don't we? And maybe we shouldn't be living with Facebook. And when we go on it, it's not Facebook, but for us, it's Gracebook. And we're not reacting in the right here, right now. We're thinking. And we're responding in a way that Jesus would want us to. We're not just piling on the pressure. We live in this world of everything's about me. And, our phones. You know, we buy a phone now and it's got these fantastic pixels, and then you press this little button so you can take this picture of yourself. And yet it's taught us that the world is so much, it's all about me. It's all about me. So am I going to be selfie-ish or selfless? Selfie-ish or selfless? Is that how we're going to be? Twitter. Are we trending or are we mending? So much on Twitter is just wrong. Because people are saying abusive things and bad things that are hurtful. And it's too easy for us to think, oh yeah, I agree with that. Are we trending or are we mending? And on WhatsApp, maybe you should thinking about what's up. Somebody's pinged off a tough WhatsApp, and instead of us reacting and responding in the right here and the right now, we're actually thinking, okay, what's up here? What's up? And how do I respond in a grace-filled, loving, kind way? And maybe it's not to respond to WhatsApp. Maybe it's to just press the little phone button and say, hey, that last thing you just posted, that message you just sent out, can we meet for a coffee and chat about it? And, you know, instead of me just pinging something back or quick like that. Too often we use all these things to put distance between us and them, when actually God's called us into relationship with people, and we should own those relationships. I have this kind of thing with emails. I try and keep my emails short. That's not rude and short, that's just short, okay? And if I have to send a long email, I do not send it on the day I got the email that wanted me to send a long email. I just say, okay, I'm going to take 24 hours before I write back to that. Because I know what I'll do. If I write back to that, it will be a reaction, not a response. So maybe we've got to think like that. But why? Why? Because your Christian character is absolutely vital to who you are and how you are. And beginning to get this stuff right, beginning to get control of our words, is actually to take a hold of our lives and take a hold of our ways. What does James say? If we get this one right, we're perfect. I wonder why James could say that. Maybe he was still on the learning curve. I don't know. So in all those instant things, all those reactionary things that this world has taught us to, we react to, maybe we've got to ask God that his grace will fill our lives in such a way that we're not reacting all the time. We are responding. You know, in the pressure of the moment, too easy to react. And as I was thinking about this and preparing it, I just kind of, my mind just wandered to the cross, which is one of the most pressurized moments in the whole of history. And I began to think about, how was he on the cross with what was going on in the instant, in the now, in the pressure? How was Jesus? And you find that he responded, he didn't react. Jesus gave instant grace. Father, forgive them. Father, forgive them. He gave instant grace. Jesus didn't cry out at people, because it would have been easy to do. You're wrong. I'm innocent. You're wrong. Instead, in all his pain and in all the pressure, instead of crying out at people, he cried out to his Father God, my God, my God. Where are you? I need you. Why have you forsaken me? Where are you? I need you. Not crying out at people. And he wasn't trending. He was mending. When he shouted those amazing words, it is finished. One of my favorite Greek words, the word is tetelestai. Tetelestai, it is finished. It is completed. It comes from the Greek word teleo, which means complete. He said it's finished. He was mending. He was mending this brokenness between me and my God, between you and your Father in heaven. Jesus wasn't trending and saying, oh, I'll just blow you all away, you're human beings, you're broken and sinful and you're killing me. And he says, how can I bring you together? And he stretches his arms out and says, it's finished. And instead of selfish, he's selfless and caring, and he speaks to John, the apostle, and he looks at him and he says to his mother, mother, behold your son. Son, behold your mother. And they both got it, because from that day on, John cared for Mary, the mother of Jesus. Instead of reacting, he was responding with all the love of God in his life, responding with grace, responding with forgiveness, responding with mending and selflessness. And maybe those are the things we've got to be praying and asking God to build into our lives. Do you know it takes 7 encouraging words to offset 1 discouraging one? One of my favorite kind of leadership preachers shared this, and he was at a conference in Germany, and he said, look, if you want to come and say something negative to me, then would you please say 7 things positive to me before you say a negative thing? And that afternoon or that lunchtime, he was out for a walk in the park, and one of the guys who was sat in the conference came marching up to him, and he said, I just need to talk to you about, forget it, and he walked away. And maybe that's how we've got to think. God, will you grace my tongue with your love? Will you grace my mind with careful thinking about other people, because they are your precious children? And the way you were on the cross with all your loving, grace-filled, mending selflessness, when you were in that moment, when I'm in the moment, God, will you have tutored your grace into my life in such a way that when I open my mouth, good things come out? Maybe just one last thing to think about. Are you a good apologizer? Some of us are rubbish, you know. We're just not good at apologizing. We've got this kind of arms folded, well, I'm right, she's wrong, or he's right, I'm wrong mentality. And actually saying sorry is not something we're good at. You know, saying sorry is one of the best things you can do to begin to mend your broken words. The humility and the grace that means you actually say, I am sorry, will you forgive me? So powerful to do that. But it comes out of a life that's been filled with humility. Let's pray together. So we can sing songs tonight. James says we can sing some great songs of worship. But then he says, what's it going to be like tomorrow morning? What's it going to be like tonight when we go home and we find things aren't exactly how we wanted them to be? What's it going to be like when we're in that instant moment and somebody's pinged us something rotten through Instagram or Facebook or whatever our chosen medium is? What's it going to be like when we live in this instant world of instant reactions? And what are you going to ask Jesus to do in you that somehow has the hallmark of the cross across your life? The hallmark of his grace. The hallmark of his selflessness. Of his love. The hallmark of learning to take things to God and crying out to him instead of crying at people. And God, I ask you, will you work this work in me? Maybe there are things in the quietness you need to say sorry to God for. You know how easy it is to lash out, how easy to write the wrong things on Facebook or Instagram, WhatsApp, whatever you use. Maybe you need to say, God, I'm sorry, please forgive me.